American investigators have recovered the data recorder from the ship which crashed into a bridge in the city of Baltimore. BBC News.
Read by Tom Sanders. Mock graves and the unlikely life-saving properties of Twitter are front of mind for Janie Godley in our comedy The C-Bomb next. First, though.
What happened?
Birmingham exploded.
On BBC iPlayer.
You look like somebody who could be somebody.
I want to be a poet.
A poet?
If I wrote the words and you sung them and this skinhead girl wrote the music.
From the creator of Peaky Blinders.
It's time a son of mine stepped up.
Go and do your duty.
I no longer just want this band to work. I need it to work.
If you don't get away, you just become what everybody already thinks you are.
This town.
We'll take over the old world.
Starts on Sunday on BBC iPlayer.
Time now for the conclusion of Janie Godley, The C-Bomb. This week she reflects on friends and enemies and takes a major decision.
The good news is because I'm getting chemo still a lot, I still have quite a lot of sore veins, but thankfully I never did heroin in the 80s, so all that saving my veins for a good day was a good thing. So I'm good with that. I'm Janie Godley. And as you can hear, despite being diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2021, I'm not dead yet. You'll hear me on stage in Glasgow and chatting to my fellow comedian daughter, Ashley Story, about some pretty dark subjects, so be warned. Okay, so let's get on with it. I'm Janie Godley and this is The C-Bomb. I do tend to be very outspoken and I get a lot of trouble online for it. And people keep saying you shouldn't argue back. And I'm like, no, I love Twitter and I love arguing. Twitter saved my life because Julia Bradbury put online the symptoms of ovarian cancer are being bloated, as when you eat, you feel as though you're already full. You keep weeing all the time and your tummy hurts. And I thought, I have all of those symptoms. And I got checked. And I had stage 3 ovarian cancer by the time I get checked. So I don't mind the abuse that I get on Twitter, you know? When I had a pub, we had so many wee men in real life would say things to me like, ugh, you're putting on the beef. I was 8'9". And I had these wee men in the pub who would go, oh, you're getting fat, Janie. I'm like, you're 19". The last time you had a waist, Nixon wasn't sweating and he was still a president. I like Twitter. I know that I have an awful lot of arguments on it. I have all these Scottish Unionists, and it's not all Scottish Unionists. I just said it was a very small bunch of them have a go at me. They hate everything that I do and they mock up gravestones of me and they tell me I should die quicker and they hate me and that I'm faking cancer. I remember saying to my husband, they've mocked up a grave of me, and he burst out laughing. I went, what are you laughing at? He went, these men spend more time thinking about you than I do. And I thought, that's true. Because I'll tell you what, my Scottish Unionist trolls have got a Presbyterian work ethic. They put the oars in, you know. And there is a part of me really enjoys it. I'm like, yeah, I wonder what they're saying about me today. And they're all raging at me. I stay alive mostly, not because I love my family, but just to annoy them.
I think that as much as you made a huge wave using social media and you created your career off the back of social media, and that was something that we had very cleverly planned. It was something that we'd worked on since I was at university.
Yeah.
And before anybody was posting online, we were churning out content. Not great.
No.
That was the basis of your career. But I think that Twitter is a toxic environment. I think it doesn't just bring out the worst in bad people. I think it brings out the worst in good people.
Yeah.
I think it encourages us to see things in a very binary way. And then you have to pick being a baddie or a goodie, like you're at the beginning of a computer game and not a human being with all the different shades of difference in you. I think it brings out the worst in you. I think it I don't know why, it just makes you feel like you need to argue with people who, yeah. who you wouldn't. If some guy came up to you in the street and said the things they say to you on Twitter, you'd laugh and walk away.
Yeah.
But for some reason on Twitter, that gets your goat up.
It's very toxic and demanding. I've fought with these people, Mel, and I've fought with your dad. By God, I've fought with him.
I think it negatively started affecting you years ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is some chemical brain, like, you know, when they'd show you those old science experiments of a rat in a cage and it presses a button that electrocutes its brain, but it gets a bit of cheese, so it keeps hurting itself to get cheese.
Dad, that's exactly what it felt like.
That's what Twitter.
That's a really good analogy.
Feels like to me, and that's
I like
what I watched.
Cheese and arguing. I was on a train going through London. It was early, early morning, and there was women and men on their computers working, because you know how we kind of get a minute to ourselves. We all have to work, even though we're travelling. So they were all working, and people were typing away. And this guy, I noticed this guy looking at me, and I kind of looked again, and he made eye contact. He went, "I know who you are." I went, "Oh, cool. Wait, did you get a prize?" He says, "You're that woman on Twitter." I said, "Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of us, but yeah, I get you." And then he went quiet, and then all the women who were on computers and men all went, "Screw that, I'm in." Heads up, and they were all watching. Normally, I think what happens is when a woman is confronted like that in a public place, she kind of puts her head down and goes, "Oh God, I hope this ends." Me, I'm like, head up, like, "Oh, bring it on, Spunky." So he's still making eye contact and he's angry, you know. I was like, whatever. And then he went, "I've saw you on Twitter." I was like, right. He went, "I don't like you." I was like, "Well, that's fine." And all the women and men are like, "No, something's going to happen." They're now on Twitter going, "Something's going to happen." And he said, "I go as far as to say I wouldn't ever have sex with you." And I said, "Well, that is really disappointing, because everybody in this train could feel the sexual pressure between the two of us. It was palpable. You want me, I want you. This is a meet cute. Let's get off at the next station and go book a hotel, and let's the two of us get really into each other. I'm so upset you don't want me. How could you not want me?" And he got up and ran off the train. And everybody looked at me and went, "Oh, we were hoping that lasted longer." I'm like, "Sorry, everybody, back to work." Do a lot of travelling as a stand-up comedian. Do a lot of travelling. And one of my favourite stories is I got on a train in London and it was heading back to Glasgow. And I get in, sat down. As soon as I sat down, there's a man sitting there. And you know the men who wear yellow mustard cords and a red jacket? And he's got big rosy cheeks. He's just sat right there. And I was like, "Hiya." And I'm dressed like hoodie, jeans, backpack. I've been doing comedy, I'm going home. My man's got a big pot of mince and tatties on, I'm heading back to Glasgow. And he's just sitting there. And as soon as I sat down, he went, "Excuse me, you do know this is first class?" And I went, "Oh, is it? Oh, God, I just came in here because the guy brings a trolley and you get free biscuits and tea. So I just sneak in." And he's like, "I beg your pardon. You have to have a first class ticket to sit in here." And you could see the other men who have got on cherry red cords and wax jackets going, "Oh." They're not allowed to hunt foxes anymore, but they can still hunt poor people. "Get her. Get her, Nigel. Get her." Nigel gets up and he goes, and it's the Pendolino train. So he goes away down the train to get the ticket man to come and get me and eject me. Because, you know, he's not going to sit in the same area of somebody who hasn't got a portfolio. So he's not having it. Not having it. So he's away down the train. He's like, "That That's how far. He's almost walked it to Haymarket. The train's that long. Gets a hold of the ticket guy who's just exhausted, and he's got that big giant, it's like, you know, a kidney dialysis machine he's got on him. He's knackered as well. He's known him out for this. He's like, you have to come up to first class. There's a poor person sitting beside us. The ticket man's like, oh, all right. I went all the way back up. Door's open. He's in. Ticket man is there. He's like, excuse me, do you have a ticket? And you know how you used to get your first class ticket in an A4 bit of paper, you could print it out? I had folded it all up into one of those. Pick a number, 1, 2, 4. Ticket man was well into it. He went number 3. He's like, pick a colour now. Blue, red, yellow or black. He's like, blue. I was like, oh, you're going to meet the love of your life. And yellow mustard cords is like, the ticket? Oh. So I get the ticket and I unflatten it all out and I give it to the ticket man. He looks at it and it's got a barcode on it. And he goes, oh, okay. Beep. Fine, leaves. Mustard cords looked at me. He went, I thought you didn't have a first class ticket. I says, I never says I didn't have a first class ticket. I says, I like being in here and I like biscuits. And do you know what? That's no even real. My pal printed it off the internet. He was back up. Chasing the ticket. You need to come back. It's a fake ticket. The two of them come back out. Shh, door's open. Ticket man goes, is that a fake ticket? I said, no. Look, if you look at the app, I have it live on the app. And he looks at the app and there it is on my phone. He's like, and he doesn't care by this point. He's like, yeah, so it is, it's real. Okay, bye. As soon as he leaves, I hand the phone over. He mustard cords and goes, my pal makes apps. He has now spent all that money on a first class ticket, but literally walked it home. So he's like, what? And just as that, the door opens and in comes the guy with the trolley, with the tea. And he's like, hi, Janie. I'm like, hi, Derek. He went, do you want free tea and biscuits? I'm like, yes, I do. And Mr. Cord's man had to take like a wee special heart tablet. So he got off at Preston and I gave him the Vicky.
I think a big reason why you feel like you can go up and talk to people is you spent your entire life with people telling you that you were less than, and you decided at some point in your mid-30s just to go, nah. And any point anybody told you you shouldn't be somewhere, you went, nah, I'm going to be here louder. And that's what you did. And, you know, there's a lot of doors being kicked in that people won't know that you kicked in just by existing.
Yeah.
It was that sort of attitude whenever you'd go for a job, they go, oh, but we've had a woman and she did a bad job, so we can't take that risk again.
Yeah.
Like, imagine saying that about any other group of people.
Yeah.
Of, we've had a German on, but it wasn't very good, so we won't have Germans again.
Yeah. We had a male surgeon, but he let a woman bleed out, so we can't have a male surgeon
it's
again.
It's wild. Yeah. But the amount of times you were faced with that and then went, fine, I will show up off my own back with my own money. I will pay to come here. Uh-huh. I will do it myself and I will prove you wrong because it's the only way in which we're ever going to make a step forward. So you laid out that cash. You went to New Zealand off your own back. Yep. And you did the New Zealand Comedy Festival and you did it amazingly. You
and I won awards and I made money. I had a great time and I showed other comedians that you don't have to wait to be invited. You can actually turn up. It's a free market.
I think that's what I mean. You taught people that you don't have to wait to be invited. If you can't get on the telly and you can't get on the radio,
create your own content.
Create your own content. Mm. I think that you making space for yourself as a working class Scottish woman with a... who doesn't kowtow, has made a bigger space for the people behind you to be themselves without having to do the whole apologising for it first bit.
I remember once I was in supermarket with honey and she's in her wee pram. Now, honey is a dachshund. She's a wee rehome. She's now 9. Honey is in a pram because she can only walk 2 miles and she gets in the pram because she loves it and it means that I can take her out and walk about much more. And this man came up and he said, can I stroke your dog? I went, no, she really doesn't like being touched, so I'd rather you didn't. He went, yeah, but she's really cute. I went, yeah, but again, that's quite creepy. She said, no, so could you just not? He's like, oh, all right. Don't know why you've got a wee dog then. We're not. I was like, let it go. So you know how you have to do your own self-serve in the tills? You have to work for the supermarket now. And yeah, I'm not in the mood for it. And I'm like, beep, oh, beep, oh, beep. And I hear, blah, 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 blah. And I turn round, and Honey is trying to bite that man in the face. And I said, excuse me, what are you doing? He went, I was just trying to give the dog a kiss. So even my dog is in the Me Too movement now. So without her consent, you're trying to winch my dog. He went, you need to put a muzzle on that dog. I was like, I think you'll find it's you that's needing a muzzle. Unbelievable. But we didn't have the Me Too movement back then. Back when I was a young girl, I worked in a factory. When I was 18, first time I'd ever worked in a factory, found out I'm not suited to factory work. But we didn't have like the Me Too movement back then. Back then, things happened and you got to the HR department and it was always a woman called Jeanette with a cardigan. It was called personnel. She had a big money plant. Always a big money. Remember the big giant green plants? A cardigan buttoned right up to her chin. And she smelt vaguely of cat. And she sat in there and she'd always a lot of rings on. Always a wee gold sovereign out of the Elizabeth Duke at Argus. Lots of gold chains on. And she'd sit there and type. And I remember going up and going, it's just to let you know that there's a guy called Tam and he keeps on touching my breasts and he keeps coming from behind and putting his hand on them. She went, that's Tam. I was like, I'd be no doing anything about that then. She went, no, Tam's a like that. You're not one to cause trouble because, you know, that would just upset everybody. She went, is there any way you can deal with it yourself? And I went, yes, there is. Yeah, there is. So my boyfriend, who's now my husband, was 17 at the time. His nickname was Mad Eyes. It was weird watching Tam wear a special brace on his leg for the rest of the time. Say, so she touched my girlfriend's breast again, I'm going to come back and harm your family. Yeah, it's quite poetic. I had that thing where I was told to shut up so often. You know, my husband's got six brothers, a bit like the Von Trapp family, but without the happiness and the singing. And they all told me to shut up, and all the wee men in the pub told me to shut up, and I didn't really occupy a space that was truly mine. So when I got the chance to go into the world as me, I decided that I would speak to everybody and say what I want.
You have the weirdest connections with people. We went on tour last year. Mum goes, Ur Divina's coming up for the Dundee show. And I'm like, who's Ur Divina? Mm-hmm. She's like, Davina McCall. I'm like, Davina McCall's coming to Dundee. Okay, Ma. And by this point, I'm convinced Ma's been catfished. I'm going to now have to deal with
a fake Davina McCall.
A woman turning up with a wig on, being like, hello, it's me, Davina McCall. We get to the show time. There's somebody here to see you in Dundee. And in walks Davina. Ur Divina, and she's like, oh, hugs, kisses. When? when did Divina become a thing? Ur Divina's coming up for a wee cup of tea before the show. Just get some biscuits ready. You'll be like, oh, we're going to London. What are we going? We've got a dinner party. Oh, that's cool. We're going to the dinner party. You'd be like, hello, this is my daughter, Ashley. And it's like, oh, hello, I'm Camilla Parker Bowlesy's son. Here's some squid. Cool. Yeah. Don't do any of my sausage jokes.
When you meet people on a level pegging and you don't treat them like celebrities, you just go and say, hi, how are you doing? We can talk about anything.
Yeah.
And that's what I do.
Yeah, but you're saying that like you know that they're celebrities, but you don't.
Do you remember that time we sat beside the head of ITV? What was his name?
He was the head of everything. Yeah. And neither of us knew.
Michael
Grade.
Grade. And we didn't know who he was.
I had the loveliest time with him. I was very young. And it was the year that we snuck into the VIP section of the BAFTAs by pretending we worked for Alan Sugar.
That's right. We walked in behind him.
I walked in behind Alan Sugar with my phone out. And when he passed the thing, I was like, just a minute, Lord Sugar. And the woman panicked so much, she let me in. And then you just followed me.
And then we sat beside Lord Grade. We didn't know who he was.
Nice guy.
It was lovely, him and his wife. He says, nobody comes and sits beside us. Nobody ever talks to us. Then all these people kept coming up and paying
bowing,
homage to him.
And bowing at him. And I was like, are you a king? Are you a king?
And I said to him, what do you do? What do you think I do? I says, I think you sell flags in Leicester Square.
You did say that to him and he was delighted
by
it.
Loved it.
Do you know what I think? I think that the upper echelons of society, you're like the chippy court jester. they're like, oh, bring in the povo. Let us say rude things.
I like that.
Bring in the scrappy urchin.
Yeah, I do.
And her big weird monkey girl. And I'm like, sausages behind you.
So I'm knitting Liam Neeson a scarf. I know it sounds weird. Could you get me it, Julia? I've got a pal who's friends with Liam Neeson. To tell you the story, is Liam liked my voiceover videos. During the pandemic, and before it as well, I realised that I could get like a video during the pandemic specifically. Nicola Sturgeon was on the TV every day and it was really long and boring and it went on for hours. So I thought what I'll do is just get all the facts and then make it really snappy and funny. And I did the same with Boris Johnson, except he was lies and I was just making up the real truth over the top of it. And then I did it for Theresa May and I did it for Ruth Davidson. Now, way back then, right up to Rishi Sunak and even David Cameron, remember him? So... I like doing voiceover. Sometimes it's wee animal voiceover. Sometimes it's famous people. And Trump, oh my God, I've made Trump say some things. Like, we could have made that up. My favourite one is the three wee bears in the street with its mammy. Yeah. And the wee bears are trying to cross the road. And all I could think was a wee Glasgow mammy going, I'm absolutely affronted. They've stopped the traffic. Well, you just move. Stephen, don't climb that tree. And then... I just put all these old voices, Scottish voices, on these videos. And I made one for Liam Neeson because I knew that he was a fan of the voiceovers. And the one I did was him. You know the famous scene where he's got the phone going, I've got a special set of skills. You've got my daughter, I'm coming after you. I did a video of that. And it was him lifting up the phone and me going, listen, son, there's a big spider in my room. See if you bring up a wee cup or something and just catch it, that'll be good. And he loved it, he laughed at it. So then my pal says to him, she started jazz knitting, which is our phrase for not following the pattern. I mean, look at it, it's absolutely... It's horrendous. It's like a vomited up in a Knickerbocker glory. But I'm knitting him the scarf. He'll need to get it before I die, that's for sure. Because the good news is, see, when I die, I don't have to grieve. I'll already be dead, and he'll have a big scarf on his neck, and you're going to see a picture of it and go, that's that creepy scarf she knitted for him. I think I'll always have a big mouth, and I think I'll always say things out loud, and I think I'll live out loud, and I think this is how I'll always be. And people get so upset and frustrated at times, and it's all about freedom of speech and the freedom to say things. And you know, I do say offensive things. I do absolutely and have been guilty of saying offensive and frightening and weird things. And I think that makes me the same as everybody else I've ever met. You know, I do say it wrong and I do say it loud, but I don't think I'm ever going to shut up about it. But I'm not going to stop arguing with people.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that, once again, you have some neurodiversity. Mm-hmm. So I honestly I think you're compelled and compulsed to speak when you don't have to. So there's part of me when you say stuff that's just like... That was just a noise had to come out of her body. Or she'd explode. Yeah. I'm not paying attention to it. I think because you had to fight so hard for every single thing, for every gig, for every bit of freedom, for your childhood, for your life, you've had to fight constantly. Everything's been a battle. Everything's been armoured up and walking in. Take no prisoners. I'm going to do it anyhow. That when life got easier and it didn't need to be like that.
Yeah.
You just still went, no, I'm ready for a fight. I'm walking into every... He said something horrible about me in the internet. Armour up, time to destroy your life, son, with words that will cut you to your quick. That was like... everything has the same level of intensity. And it was like there was never a point where you could just go.
Yeah.
And
I think
have a break.
I reached that point.
I would hope so. Because I don't want to see you spend the rest of your life, however long it is, fighting with people you don't know on the internet for people you don't know.
I know, I do tend to stick an awful lot up for Meghan Markle, don't I?
You don't know her, ma.
No, I know.
She's not your daughter. She's a woman of suits who married a royal.
I know. Do you think I should delete Twitter?
Yes.
No, Ashley. Hang on till I check it. Well, I'll check what's happening on Twitter first. Ashley, I don't know how to delete it.
But I don't. Everybody's now filming you because this is so monumental. Are you actually going to delete Twitter?
I'm going to delete Twitter. How do I do it? So I go to...
You go to your account and you deactivate account.
Is that under settings and support?
They're going to think you've finally died.
Oh my God. Shall I tell them first?
No. I don't know. Should she tell them?
No.
Or should she just delete it? Should she just delete it? Just delete it.
Right,
are you actually doing this?
I'm doing it, Ashley. Your account. Deactivate your account.
Yeah.
Is that it there?
Yeah.
Confirm your password. Oh God. Hang on a second. No, I think I've got it. Ashley, I've got it.
Right.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm going to delete Twitter.
Oh, I can't believe you've just done that.
Why?
That's amazing. Oh, well done, Ma. That was a bad bit of your brain.
It was a bad bit of my brain. It's gone.
That was doing bad stuff to you. How do you feel?
I feel as though I'm lighter.
You literally had a door in which the worst people in the world could come and shout the worst things in the world at you without any consequences. And you went there every day.
It was constantly a bad part of a negative. It was negative. There's so much love. I have to first of all say the amount of love and support I got on Twitter was absolutely overwhelming. I can't take that away. But that constant negative. There was even an account set up recently and it was called Annie Curry 82. It was my mammy's name and it had the date of her death and they were saying that she wasn't killed and I was lying about child abuse and they had a picture of my mammy and I just thought it's time to not see that ever again. So it's gone.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
I know. Are you proud of me?
Yeah, just don't start fighting with people on Threads.
And I won't shut up about the causes I care about. For instance, the trans rights. I'm very, very much up for supporting trans rights. And I do... Thank you very much. I don't understand the people that trans people are such a threat, yeah, because a sign on a door is going to stop a person from coming in and sexually assaulting women, because we all know that's what's happened historically. So here's my point. See if somebody, a man, let's say a man, shaves all his legs... shaves all his hair, like they say this happens, they say this is what's happening. If a man puts on a pair of high heels, a basque, puts on makeup, lipstick, does all his hair up, does all his nails and comes into a dressing room in a shop, just if I feel like my diddies, I'm going to let him, because you know why? No man's ever made that effort for me. Going to be a lot of letter writing. Guys, I have had the strangest of times and the best of times and the worst of times. But the most important thing is I've had time. And I've had time to connect with people like yourself and people who come to see me. And I can't thank you enough for all of your support that you've given me. Yous have been great. I've been Janie. Good night.
Janie Godley, The Sea Bomb was written by Janie Godley. It featured Ashley Story and it was produced by Julia Sutherland at Dabster Productions for Radio 4. The news is next and then we're off to Ambridge, where Kenton fears the consequences of recent events.
On BBC Radio 4.
Did he write Twinkle Twinkle Little Star?
Mozart's music is all over our pop culture. He composed over 600 pieces in his short lifetime.
He didn't actually write. It was already a piece of music.
He sampled it.
I'm Greg Jenner, and together with the comedian David O'Doherty, the historian Dr. Hannah Templeton, and the BBC Concert Orchestra, I am digging deep into the life of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Next you'll tell us he didn't write Amadeus, Amadeus, Amadeus.
We're the comedy podcast that takes history seriously. We're called You're Dead to Me. This is our Mozart special.